to Over the Trent. Now, Nottingham Forest have a bad history of living in the past, and Over the Trent is very much going for that. Two URN alumni, say that again, two URN legends join me on the call. The previous host of Over the Trent, James Aldred, is with me. James, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, Dom. It's good to be back here. It's a long time since we did one of these.
It is a long time. Unfortunately, in the villains' corner is Spurs fan, property owner, Dan Henley. Dan, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. I wouldn't go as far to say you are a legend, but yeah. Oh, I used to do it once or twice.
Don't do yourself down. Founding fathers of whistleblowers. You can't put yourself down like that. Now, both of you lads have gone on from university doing very interesting stuff. James, can you give the listeners a brief overview of what you're doing at the moment?
So I am essentially making it up as I go along as a kind of a freelance broadcaster, basically, doing some bits for the BBC at present. And just trying to cling on to the URN experience as much as I can, basically, in the real world. And it's good, but it's not quite those studios on the second floor of the Trent building, put it that way. Not even the Trent building, the Portland building. I see I've been away for too long. I'm getting buildings confused.
We're going to have to sort that out. Dan, how have you been since leaving? Hangovers? Have you been able to fill that hole in your life?
No. I don't have a Twitter account for anymore, so it's quite depressing. I'm now working like a boring accounting job, and I still can't afford to get a lampshade, so it's not going well for me.
No, but I've got some interesting news. Hangovers are looking at getting a new shirt this year, Dan. I will not spoil anything, but it's going to be very exciting. So anyone listening from your end, just keep your eyes open for that. So we're going to talk about Forest's last two games in the Premier League, starting with a 1-1 draw against Everton. Now, I was playing cricket. I won't go into the figures, but they were very good, James. I'm not going to brag, but very good. James was at the game at Goodison for the first time this season. What was Goodison like as an Everton fan, James?
Well, it was kind of a bit of a strange atmosphere, I think, surrounding the game, to be honest with you. Obviously, we'd played at home a fortnight ago against Chelsea, and I think there was a lot of hype and expectation going into that game based on the way that we'd ended the previous season. But that game, in kind of what's become the narrative really for Everton so far this season, was kind of defined by the fact that we didn't have much quality at the top end of the pitch. So kind of all the buzz and enthusiasm surrounding Goodison kind of dropped down to a significant level, I would say, going into the Forest game. But there was, you know, a bit of a buzz about the place. I've said it to you privately, Dom. I think a lot of our fans are really, really pleased to see Nottingham Forest back. There was definitely an enthusiasm to see what your supporters were going to be like and what you were going to bring to the game. It was, I think, the first 15 minutes or so got the crowd really engaged because Everton started pretty well. And obviously, the way the game ended, there was a bit of a buzz leaving. Still probably more questions than answers about Everton this season. And I think that 90 minutes really summed that up.
Well, it was a late equaliser for Everton, late minute heartbreak for Forest. If you looked at the game on stats, it seems like quite an even game. James, you were at the ground and you said to me again privately that Everton probably were in the ascendancy for most of the game, I'd argue. From what I've seen, it looked like Everton probably played the better football. What would you say? Did Forest get away with it a little bit? Because that seems to be the narrative going throughout Forest this season.
Well, I think, like I mentioned earlier, Everton definitely started the stronger of the two teams. And I do think if Everton had scored in that period, in that first 20, 25 minutes, then it would have been really interesting to see how Forest would have reacted. We were getting a lot of joy in and around your centre backs, and there were a couple of nice overlapping runs made, you know, on occasion by the likes of Patterson and Mikalenko, but our delivery was a little bit questionable. But I think it's a little bit of a disservice to Forest to say that they were a little bit fortunate. They definitely grew into the game. They had a couple of half chances in the first half. James Tarkowski slipped a couple of times, and Forest nearly got in behind, and then, you know, this is where Steve Cooper deserves a lot of credit. He made some big changes in the second half, bringing on Morgan Gibbs-White and Ryan Yates, and that really gave Forest a foothold in the game. And I wouldn't say necessarily that your goal's coming, but it wasn't a huge surprise to me when Brennan Johnson netted. The disappointing thing for Forest, though, is they couldn't see it out, because like I said, from about the hour on mark onwards, they were definitely the team that had a little bit more control of the game. And Everton, while they were getting opportunities to break and have a go, didn't really show a great deal of quality. So while in hindsight, it's probably a good result for Forest, I think on reflection, they might be kicking themselves that they didn't get 3 points.
Certainly that was the case across social media. And then I think a sort of second wave of thought came along going, we've just got a good draw away from home. We should really just enjoy this. And Everton can be a good team. And I want to hear Dan's thought on this, because obviously Dan is looking at maybe the top four playing on a Tuesday or Wednesday night against Atletico Madrid. That's his level. What do you think the levels are for Everton and Forest from a Spurs point of view?
To be honest, Everton absolutely shocking. So Forest, I think both teams, Forest had to be improved on last season. That team, although it did really well to push on and get promoted from the Championship, was going to just automatically go straight back down. They didn't have the quality and the quality and depth. What they've done in this summer may be reckless, but it definitely is strengthening. And you look at Everton, and the first few games of the season, they were getting chances, but there was no sort of focal point to put them in the back of the net. You're looking at games where you've started off with McNeil, Gray, Wobi, and you've not really got a striker in there when you've not got Calvert-Lewin. I think that's where Mal Payne might cause a few more issues. But no, you're both talking probably mid-table this season. I don't think Everton are going to struggle like they did last season. I think Lampard's going to get you playing decent football. And I think Forrest has strengthened well, and Cooper's obviously a very good gaffer.
Yeah, I think Dom, just to build on Dan's point, I think one similarity between the two teams to an extent in this game that we're focusing on Everton Forest is there are definitely nerves in both dressing rooms. I think Forest came out in that first 15 to 20 minutes and they did look a little bit tense, which is understandable. You know, it's a difficult, you know, atmosphere to play in Goodison, and they're still getting kind of acclimatized to the Premier League. Whereas Everton in that last half an hour, when Forest was starting to get a little bit more control of the ball and Gibbs White was causing problems, they kind of went into their shell a little bit. I think the promising thing for Forest is that as the games progressed, including, you know, most recently the Tottenham match, they are looking less fearful, I should say. And that can only bode well moving forward.
The idea and the topic of transfers has come up very quickly by Dan Henley about Forest. I want to hear, James, your thoughts of Forest from outside the Forest bubble, because you've obviously known Forest will buy 7 players on deadline day under Aitor Karanka. So this isn't new for us. This isn't new for Forest. But what is your perception of this very quick purchasing of players?
Well, I think it's, as Dan kind of alluded to earlier, it needed to happen because, you know, and I think you'll be the first person to admit, Dom, that Forest team, while they did incredibly well to get promoted, they probably weren't the third best team in the Championship last season, certainly in terms of the individuals that made up the starting 11. So that business had to happen. I think you've got to credit those behind the scenes for backing Steve Cooper, because we've seen at another newly promoted club today that not all boards and managers are singing from the same hymn sheet. So clearly there is a shared vision and goal there. And ultimately, you know, it's not for us really to question the players that Forest have brought in and the money that they've spent. Steve Cooper will be judged on that in a few months' time. If he thinks spending in excess of £25 million on Morgan Gibbs-White is the right decision, then you know, you've got to back him. And he can point to their working relationship at Swansea as evidence that when the two of them are together, it can work well. There has been a lot of talk about it. I think the Jesse Lingard transfer definitely raised a couple of eyebrows, some saying, you know, maybe he's gone to Forest to earn slightly more money than he would at West Ham. We'll never know the answer to that. But you're not the first, and you're certainly not going to be the last newly promoted club to spend a lot of money. I think people were taken aback a little bit because the traditions of Forest, like you said, you know, it's no surprise, you know, you're signing a lot of players. You've done that before. You did that under Sabri Lamouchi in his second season that summer. Remember, we were talking about new players basically every episode of this podcast. So it's no surprise, but the extent of your spending, I think, is a bit of a surprise. And it's, you know, something that fans have just got to get used to.
Totally agree. And most of those players, you're talking like players like Bianconi, have made their debut against Grimsby midweek in a League Cup game, which Forest won 3-0. A Yatesy unbelievable left-footed volley. Did either of you see it, or is it gone in the sands of time? Both of you shaking your heads, so we're going to say no. Sam Surridge scored two absolute beauties, and it sealed a game against Spurs at the City Ground, which moves us nicely on to the most controversial game of the week. Conte couldn't go 5 minutes without a bit of controversy, can he? Dan, as a Spurs fan, what were your thoughts on the game?
Oh, we absolutely battered you. 60 minutes. No, Forest were very good in the first half. I was impressed. I didn't expect that level of guile, aggressiveness on the ball. I thought they really pinned Spurs back for a good half an hour in the first half. And I think it took us by surprise. And I think the noise of the City Ground has definitely aided in pushing the team forward. I thought Spurs throughout the game controlled it, whether with or without the ball. I don't feel like Forest had loads of clear-cut chances. There was a few, as you say, that skimmed past the post, or headers just went wide, shots from outside the box straight to Lloris. There wasn't really much that was going to threaten the Spurs goal, but there's certainly patterns of play that are going to cause a lot of teams problems this season at City Ground.
James, as the neutral in this game, for the purpose of this, because we know you have a soft spot for Forest deep within your heart, were Forest naive? Because a lot of people have said that, Match of the Day has said that, and a few pundits have come out and said Forest played into Spurs' hands. And if you look at the results, certainly. But I'm going to offer a little bit of defence here for Forest. If you look at Kane's goal, it's outside the box in front of two defenders. It's beautifully placed. And the last one is simply just tiredness. But I want to hear your thoughts. Was it Forest playing into Spurs' hands, or did Forest bring the game to Spurs?
I don't think it was necessarily naivety from Forest, because if you think, while Tottenham have had an excellent start to the season and they have got some brilliant players, I don't think they have the quality of team, which means that, you know, when you take on a Manchester City or a Liverpool, or even Chelsea to an extent, and, you know, a lot of newly promoted clubs and clubs in the lower echelons of the league would kind of set up with kind of a low block and sit back. I don't think Tottenham have got the intricacy yet for teams to set up like that. So I think Forest were well within the right to go and have a go. And we've seen over the last year or so, particularly, you know, at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, some teams go and really challenge Spurs and give them a game. So I think Forest were well within their rights to do that. I think the thing that was lacking from Forest really was just that little bit of cutting edge. And I do think that will come when, you know, the front three of Gibbs-White, Johnson and Lingard, you know, play together a little bit more. I do think they need one more at the top of that to kind of provide that threat, even if it's someone who's going to score 6 to 8 goals for you this season, because I have no doubts that the three behind will score a similar number. I think that was the only thing that was really missing, because for all Forest's pressing and passing and you know, high energy, didn't really test Hugo Lloris a great deal, and in those decisive moments, Tottenham were a little bit more efficient. So naive, no, just lacking one or two bits of quality at key times, I think. But I think that was probably to be expected over the course of the 90 minutes, considering the difference between the two teams.
I totally agree. Playing a sort of false nine, me and Kieran decided. Kieran will be in the second half of this episode, where we talk about trips to Notts County and the Man City games ahead of the Bournemouth clash, which is going to be a 6-pointer. But let's go back to the Spurs game. Harry Kane, what an amazing, amazing striker. Dan, he hasn't overtook yet, but he's on level with Andrew or Andy Cole. I'm never sure which one Mr. Cole prefers. He's gotten very testy about it in the past. Just how good is Kane for Spurs at the moment?
Bloody useless at penalties, though, isn't he? No, he's the best forward in the world, the best striker in the world. At the moment, you could say Lewandowski. I don't think Lewandowski has the same ability to drop deep and play incredible balls that we were seeing into some. So if Spurs are more clinical, we could have had quite a few more. We got into really strong areas, and a lot of the time it was Son or Kulusevski or Højbjerg making the wrong decision. But Kane was absolutely phenomenal. And this is becoming far too regular at this point of just seeing Kane just taking a game by the scruff of the neck and winning games on his own. He's a phenomenal player. There's just no more you can say about him. We've been saying this for 4 or 5 years now that he's one of the most elite finishers in the world. He's one of the best playmakers in the world. He's strong off both feet. He hits the side netting, the inside of the netting every single time. He's normally very good from the penalty spot. Give Henderson fair enough. With his cap, he did well. But yeah, Kane is brilliant. That was the difference between the two teams. Spurs had Harry Kane. Nottingham Forest had nothing up front.
Yeah, I really do agree with that. Kane's absolute mastery of just placing the ball and being in the right place at the right time was so noticeable. I've never noticed that on telly as much. But when you're at the ground live, you can really spot Kane's absolute mastery of seemingly everything going forward. But you did touch on Dean Henderson's Captain America style save. What were your thoughts on Dean Henderson over the past few weeks? He has been the Fantasy Premier League's highest scoring goalkeeper. He's also been man of the match for Forest against Everton. James, when you saw Dean Henderson was going to Forest, do you think this is about Dean Henderson trying to get into England, James? Or do you think this is a good signing for Forest? Which one do you think is more in favour?
I thought it was a great signing for Forest, to be honest, Dom, at the time, because it's not that long ago Henderson had two fantastic loan spells at Sheffield United and was absolutely brilliant for them. And my memory of his time at Sheffield United is he kind of had a pretty impeccable record for them. I know he made a mistake against Liverpool at Bramall Lane. I remember Genie Wijnaldum scored, it went through his legs. But other than that, he was brilliant. And actually, a lot of Sheffield United fans said, going into that second season, if they'd kept Henderson and not signed Ramsdale, they might have had a better campaign. And I think what he has brought to Forest, although it's not a great deal of Premier League experience, that know-how of the top flight, I think helps. I think in addition to that, the fact that he's got a point to prove at a club that has a point to prove really helps. And even something like the penalty save celebration, which we saw against West Ham as well, that really gets the crowd on side, and he kind of plays into this underdog narrative that I think if Forest are going to stay up this season, they've got to harness. So no, I think he's been good. Whether it's going to be enough for him to break into the England squad, I would imagine it will be, because of his distribution being a little bit better than someone like Nick Pope. But he's got a lot of competition, and there's still quite a long way to go until Qatar.
Definitely agree. And now, Dan, you're going to have to break this up as the neutral in this debate. Who would you rather have at the back in goal for England? Would you rather have Jordan Pickford of Everton or the Captain Marvel of Dean Henderson? Who are you having in goal for the three Lions?
I think some former URN and some current URN members will appreciate you dropping Ramsdale from this conversation as well. I think for me, I just want to touch on this Henderson, this celebration. James, you mentioned how it gets the crowd going. But if my goalkeeper, 1-0 down, takes off his hat, waves it in the air, that's just absolutely ridiculous. I'd be absolutely fuming at him. If Spurs were to go away from the throwing or from a corner, whatever it came from that save, scored a goal, how silly does that make Henderson look? If it's the last minute of a game, right? You've saved the last kick of the game, penalty, happy days, rescued a point, whatever. Fine, go ahead, celebrate. But these are different levels now. You're fighting for your team's right for the Premier League. Celebrating a 1-0 penalty save, 1-0 down penalty save, it is a little bit tin pot. And I don't like to say that about Forest, because they are a big club and it's not a big club thing to do. To touch on the goalkeeper position, I think Pickford still is England's number one. We'll see how that develops over the next few months, how Pickford gets on at Everton. If Henderson continues his form at Nottingham Forest, see how he gets on against Manchester City, because that is going to be a big test for him. But no, I think at the moment, as things stand, Henderson probably overtakes Ramsdale as number two, just because of his I just feel more comfortable with his distribution. But Pickford for me is still number one. You've got to trust in the keeper that's taken us this far.
I agree. I can see your point about the cap waving celebrations. But when you're following a legend like Bruce Samba, you've got to have an element of housery. And I think Forest fans do miss Samba a lot, and it's such a disappointing way for him to leave. But I think it just sums up that you've got big boots to fill, and the Brickford end got behind him and he's created an atmosphere, and that moment of just pure celebration really got Forest going for another 5 minutes. So I can see both sides of the argument. The phrase tin pot, though, brings on to the next sort of interesting debate. We're going to need maturity. We're going to need James Aldred on this one. You described David Johnson, Forest legend, and Ipswich legend, as a little bit small time, and I quote, I'm not sure the BBC wants to hear this, James, for his tweet about what his son and Nico Williams did to a certain, I've forgotten his name, a Spurs player who did keepy-ups. Who is in the right, or is no one in the right here, James?
Well, I think you can, personally, I think you can both say that Richarlison was probably wrong to do what he did because, you know, it was kind of unnecessary. But you can also say the glorification, for want of a better word, of what was a really cynical bad tackle is also wrong. I think you can both say those things. And I thought this narrative that's kind of been perpetuated a little bit that Richarlison got what was coming to him, and you know, you don't get away with that kind of thing at Nottingham Forest. It's, you know, for me, it's a bit, they're the kind of things that might be said if you went to the Den in an FA Cup or League Cup tie. You know, don't be doing step overs on our pitch or someone's going to volley you off it. I just feel like this Forest team are better than that. And it was kind of, for me, that whole incident kind of not ruined, but tainted a little bit what had been a really, really engaging game of football. I think it was stupid of Richarlison because it kind of took the shine away from what was a brilliant assist. And he does so well to win the ball back in the corner as well. I think that's the one element of that assist which is kind of forgotten. And it took a little bit of a shine away from Forrest and Brennan Johnson, who did a good start to the season. So, yeah, I just thought Forrest should have strayed away from getting involved in that kind of a narrative.
That was very mature of you, James. You should be very proud.
It was a bit diplomatic, wasn't it? And it was, sitting on the fence, but
yeah, I think politics broadcasting is the next for James Aldred. Dan, I want to hear your thoughts on this. Forest have to make the City Ground a fortress. We've all said that in the build-up. Home points can be so important. Is it not a little bit okay to send out a message? I think David Proton has said that, you know what, if that happened in my day, and David Proton's a very good presenter, we would have been told to get him off the pitch. Richarlison creates problems for defenders. It's very hard to sort of define him as a player. Do you think him riling Forrest up and, you know, his diving, pretending he was hurt when, I can't remember the incident, but someone walked past him and he went down for 5 minutes. It was a little bit embarrassing. Richarlison, for you, is he the sort of player Forrest should be worried about? An extremely well-talented player alongside a very good mental player as well. Is he the sort of person who could cause problems for Forrest later down the line?
Yeah, if that's the kind of reaction that Forest players are giving to this type of player, they're going to get run a riot by teams like Crystal Palace that have Wilfried Zaha and Everett Yese. You have teams like Liverpool, Luis Diaz, he's going to be doing exactly the same stuff. You're going to be getting this every week in the Premier League. We've been seeing this type of activity from all top skillful players, technically gifted players over the years. Look at Ronaldinho. Most of the stuff that Ronaldinho would do is completely unnecessary. You look at the stuff that Man United fans have been sharing this week about Antony doing these little like 360 spins on the ball. What is the need for that? Surely that's doing exactly the same thing as what Trellison's doing. It's invoking a reaction from the opposition player. And if you can invoke that kind of reaction, that's getting you the one up. You've got their head on something else other than the football. Conte knows exactly what he's doing. Conte, you can tell, loves Richarlison. He brings him on, 30 minutes to go. Forrest are on the up. Let's start riling them up and taking their focus off trying to get back into the football game and start kicking him to death. He's a tough boy. He's going to get on with it.
This might sound strange, but one thing I would say about Richarlison is I actually think a lot of his antics aren't necessarily to wind up the opposition. They're to entertain his own fans. Because I think where he did those skills are really interesting. I don't think he would be doing those keepy uppies at the Brian Clough stand. It's right in front of the away fans. He's just produced a really outrageous assist, which again, I don't think he would have tried at the other end of the pitch. And, you know, he did it for Everton all the time. And those going down and diving and holding on to, you know, his leg when it's barely been brushed, that's purely for his own team. And I think the byproduct of that is that he winds a lot of supporters up, the opposition supporters up. But again, I think he does that because his own fans love it rather than, you know, he's not someone who wants to kind of swim in the hate that other fans throw his way. He wants to just be loved by his own fan base, and those kind of antics certainly endear him to supporters anyway.
Yeah, and I think he's actually a really good signing for Spurs. I think he's that extra little bit of depth and that problem, almost like what Wijnaldum was, or maybe even Mane to a certain extent was for Liverpool, that sort of key holding person who can just create a chance, create a goal scoring situation when things are tough and when you need that 1-2-0 or 0-0-1-0. He's that person who will get involved just when you need him. And I think that's why Spurs might do something a little bit special this year. Dan, what do you think is going to be the final resting place of Spurs this season?
A Conte first proper season. We've seen some good signings. As you mentioned, I think Richarlison's up there with one of the signings of the season across most teams. He's something that Spurs have lacked for years and years and years. He is a wide forward, yes, but he can play and he can rotate with Kane. You give Kane his rest. He can then rock up after a fresh week, no Champions League football, no midweek football, and just play against the teams he needs to play against rather than having to come on the last 30 minutes against some Wi-Fi password. It's a Tottenham team that has strengthened a lot from last season. We've got rid of a lot of the players that weren't playing, causing problems. We brought in a lot of players that are just much fitter, much stronger. We've got the tallest average team in the Premier League. We're imposing. We're a proper Conte team now. And you look at that Chelsea team that won the league under Conte. It wasn't a team that was filled with star-studded players. It was a team that was rifled together. It didn't start the season well. It had a team that was full of fatigue, and they grew into that season and they just kept on grinding away results. This is how Conte teams play. And I don't think they're going to be competing for the title. I don't think they're going to be one or two. I think we'll probably sit third. We were 22 points off Man City last season. That gap is going to become a lot smaller. And I think over the next two transfer windows, if we can back Conte the way that Conte wants to back, I think next season we can really push for the top two positions and really see what Conte is all about.
I really do hope Spurs do break that duck and maybe win a trophy. Hopefully it's the Carabao, so it's still. In the next half of the episode, I'll be joined by Kieran Etheridge, the usual second host. We'll talk about Notts County versus Solihull Moors. We'll talk about, do Forest need another centre-back? If you look at the last two goals for Forest, there have been problems at the back. We only got a few more minutes left on the call. The last two goals, if you look at Cook against Kane and Worrell against, I've forgotten who scored for Everton. I'm sorry, James. Damari Gray. The Forest need a bit of pace at the back, lads. I'm going to go James first.
Yeah, definitely. Everton got in a couple of times. And I think if Everton had been a little bit more direct and had a striker, they'd have got in. Whether this fellow that you've signed on loan from Atletico Madrid is able to give you that athleticism, I don't know. But yeah, a speedy centre-back should be a priority.
Dan, final words from you on the podcast. Where do you think Forest will finish this year?
I don't think, from what I saw at the weekend, I don't think Forest are going to be struggling for relegation. I think they're going to be sat around 12th, 13th. And I think they'll finish above Leicester. I really do. I don't see Forest being any sort of problem. They're going to put some teams to the sword this season. And if they can get their strikers firing, they'll score plenty of goals. And there's loads of new signings. So much to be excited about for Forest this season. I don't think it's going to be a season that's a bit squeaky bum time.
Lads, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you two again. Plenty more to come in the rest of the podcast. But go well and keep it your own. Hello and welcome to part two of Over the Trent. The night after six goals were put behind Dean Henderson in a defeat I can't remember Forest ever suffering before. Quite a bad night. Or was it? here to discuss that with me is Kieran Etheridge, as we're going to talk about Notts County and Mansfield Town a little bit too. But Kieran, how are you down on the South Coast?
It's good. It's rained for the first time in a while, which was quite a surprise when I woke up. But I didn't actually get to watch the game. I was at work getting updates from my manager, but I think it was expected.
Yes. And let's talk about expectation. I think luckily the result against Tottenham, I think, dimmed down a few of the Forest fans' expectations, and that we weren't invincible. But it was a bit of a disappointing hit for six, I'm going to say. Haaland, how amazing was he last night? In my opinion, one of the greatest young performances. I think the stat was he was the fastest under 25 to get to a hat-trick in five games. And it's just, he was so good. And I thought Worrell played quite okay. He was just outclassed. And Worrell, we all know, is making a massive step up. And I'd like to think he was England quality. And I think last night might have proved he wasn't. Personally, I'd have liked to have him on the, at least getting a game or two for England in the build-up to the World Cup. But that doesn't look very likely, considering we're going to be playing players to the same quality of Haaland. It was just almost a mauling. I'm not sure the percentage of passes. We only had 2-3 shots on target. It was a bit of a mess all round. And after the 12th minute, when Haaland taps that in, the atmosphere in the Forest team certainly died. The fans kept going. Mm. But Kieran, do Forest fans have to just look at Haaland and think, okay, he's very good?
Yes, he's one of the best strikers in the world. Mm. So I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of, him scoring a hat-trick against a newly promoted side. You have to remember that our defence is good for a championship standard, but I don't think it's quite there for a Premier League standard yet. There's still a lot of holes in there. I mean, Lodi and Williams are probably Premier League standard centre-backs, wing-backs.
Yeah.
They definitely can play at this level. The centre-backs, I still think Worrell can get there, but I don't think he's quite there yet. Mm. Same with McKenna. And obviously, we were playing Kouyaté as well yesterday, which, I'm not a fan of him.
I didn't like his positioning last night a few times. And there might have been one time where he led to a goal. And if you look at the Kane goal, he's the one who leaves Kane unfree for the second one against Spurs. It just felt a little lazy or unaware of his positioning. That can be changed. That's not something that is too worried about. But with Forest making so many signings, and loyalty is something Forest are proud of, you don't want to say maybe Worrell or McKenna have got to move. But the way Kane and Haaland have opened us up is a little bit worrying. But also, let's not forget, both of those are world-class strikers.
Yeah.
One's won a golden boot at a World Cup. One is on his way to winning 1,000 golden boots in any league he'll go into. So we might need to just temper this. But if you look at pace at the back, that seems to be a bit of a problem. If you look at the Demarai Gray goal, that was a big problem. And Steve Cook is eating the dust of Harry Kane. And whilst I thought Steve Cook was certainly solid against Kane, and if you look at the Kane goal, I said this in the previous part, it's actually from outside the box at a tough angle. It's the finish that's incredible. So I think we need to temper Forest emotions with the class of teams we're playing.
I think the other thing to take into account here is that Pep is an outstanding coach. Oh, yeah. He was always going to find a way to break this side down. Yeah. It's just what he does. I remember when Brighton first came up into the Premier League, we played City in our first ever game at the Amex in the Premier League. And we got destroyed as well. Not quite to this extent, but we did get beaten pretty badly. And this City side is a better quality City side than it was back then. So I think that, as you said, you've got to kind of temper the emotions here. I think the team's just got to kind of look at this, learn from it, but not let it get them down too much. Look forward to Bournemouth, obviously, coming up. And that is a must-win game.
Totally agree. Now, in the time we've had in the podcast, I'm not sure if we have mentioned the signing of Lodi. I think we have, but let's just put it in perspective. This time 5 days ago, or 370 days ago, Forest started Gaetang Bong against Derby County. if you've got to accept with changing a whole scale squad that arguably moments like this is something as well that we have to mention. I don't think anyone's upset or angry. I think Forest fans, if you are like that, you really need to think about what your expectations of the squad are. But I just think it's a bit of a shame, but we haven't embarrassed ourselves. You look at the João Cancelo goal, the Alvarez. It's frankly cheating Derby County. Sorry, they're not bringing on De Bruyne. It was unreal. They're bringing on De Bruyne against us. I mean, that's not fair.
Yeah, let's look at who they actually brought on. They brought on De Bruyne, Sergio Gomez, who they just signed from a Belgian club, who's going to be their starting left back, according to Pep. Mahrez. Yeah. Like, they've brought all these kind of players, whereas, no disrespect to who we brought on, but the quality of player in Julian Biancone, Colback, Awani, Toffolo and Dennis, there's a bit of a gap in quality there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, Emmanuel Dennis, I think this is the second time he's lost 6-0 at Etihad. I mean, it was quite funny when you're 4-5-0 down and they're bringing on De Bruyne and you're bringing on Colback. I mean, I love that Colback. I think any podcast listener will know. I've even bought a shirt with his name on the back and bought the Ginger Perlo shirt from Art of Football. So I love the man, but I am prepared to admit slightly difference in standard between him. A 9-0 thumping against Liverpool, just humiliated, sacked the manager Scott Parker, which we'll talk to Kieran a little bit after, and then Bournemouth 0, Wolverhampton Wanderers 0. Kieran, what's your thoughts on the Bournemouth situation coming into the Forest game?
Well, when you've lost your manager this early in the season, and I don't think that they've not brought anyone in as of yet. It is deadline day, so anything can happen at the moment. I think they're going to be coming into this game looking quite shaky. However, the squad does know that they can beat us because they did it last season. That's going to be a kind of belief that they have. However, this Bournemouth side just looks... this completely new look Forest side, whereas this Bournemouth side, they've done barely anything to strengthen, which is their biggest mistake coming into here. I mean, Scott Parker literally said himself in a press conference that this he hasn't got the tools to stay in this division with this squad. And I think anyone that they bring in, they could bring in a really, really good manager. But unless they get backed in January and a miracle happens, this Bournemouth side isn't staying up just because it just isn't Premier League quality. Whereas obviously Forest brought in Champions League standard players, which is quite interesting. Romeo Freuler. I don't know what his first name is. He is a centre mid from Atalanta and he looks solid. He looked pretty decent against City as well. He was in that Atlanta side when they came into the Champions League and put on that kind of run. And Lodi was Atletico's starting left back last season. I mean, he didn't play this season, but he was starting for him last season. And now he's playing for Forest. So, like, we've strengthened a lot better than they have, brought in talent. So I'm more optimistic for the Bournemouth side. But these other kind of games where Forest have to win and pick up points here, otherwise they're in a real danger of going down.
Yeah, I do agree. These are games you have to win. And I think a serious mood change could happen if we don't pick up points against Bournemouth or Leeds or Fulham. Three massive games coming up. But we're going to switch our attention from the Premier League to the National League. Notts County have been on a fantastic run. I was lucky enough to go and see them play Solihull Moors, who were sixth in the table, Notts County are fifth. One thing I will say is the atmosphere. It was a really enjoyable game to go to. Now, I've never been to a National League game. It's my first Notts County game. Pricing was fantastic. 16 quid, really accessible on the door. Obviously, if you booked in advance, it would have been cheaper. Really good atmosphere. Everyone was really welcoming. And you really got the sense that this was a family club. And I know we say it's a lot about Forest, but there was a lot more families there. A lot of elderly gentlemen and elderly women. It was really like wholesome. Yeah.
It's a nice club.
Yeah. And I was desperate to go back. And I think they only had 7,000 there. I say only in National League, that's amazing. But if you are in and our wonderful listeners, can you just go down when Forest aren't playing or your team in the Premier League's not playing? you'd be really helping a community out. That's what I'd say. Let's get on to the pitch, though. Notts County, far and above the better team than Solihull Moors, who were simply miles away from Notts County. The passing, the movement. I want to hear your thoughts on this tactic, Kieran. Goal kicks for Notts County. This proved unpopular with Meadow Lane. They have a short kick from the keeper. This is Notts County. Then there'll be a 1-2, but the keeper will go outside the box. So the marker close, and he'd usually be outside the box, wander a few yards, and then just pump it. And I'm not really sure what he was trying to achieve. It was a very interesting decision. But yeah, it was fraught with difficulties, and sometimes the ball was lost in the midfield. Have you ever seen anything like that at Brighton or anything? No.
No. That sounds terrible. Like a changeover in play and the keeper's way out of position. Surely, yeah. Like, especially at this level, like, I mean, the players aren't particularly, no disrespect to County, but adept at, like, they're no Kevin De Bruyne, let's say.
No.
There's a very high possibility of a changeover in play in midfield. So I'm not quite sure why you would risk that. But, I mean, if it works, it works. But by the sounds of it, it didn't.
No, Notts had lots of good chances and just failed to put it in the net. Many times getting into really good positions and just good saves, just wide of the post, hitting the post. It was a frustrating game. And for Adam Chickson just to tap one in at the far post.
Of course it was Chickson.
Yeah, you just felt it had to be Chickson. For those who aren't aware, Adam Chickson is the lifelong hero of one of our former members, Reese. If you actually look at what Notts County have played, they've had some pretty tough games against Boreham Wood, Chesterfield, Halifax Town and Solihull Moors. They are the second team in the division not to have a loss. Now, this division is impossible to get out of, as the Welcome to Wrexham show really emphasises. And the first game is against Notts County last year. It's a shame they didn't mention Notts County were the oldest team in professional football. But it's an enjoyable documentary. Kieran, have you had a chance to watch it?
I haven't done, no. I've seen, obviously, you and a lot of other people talking about it and saying that it's good. So I might try and get around to watching it eventually. Might be something that I watch in my free time when I'm back up in Notts, to be honest.
It's like a manageable amount of watchable, if you know what I mean. Like, it's got Ryan around 2 years. Without Ryan, it wouldn't be as good. But the manager's perspective is a bit weird because, obviously, you get sacked. And then they bring in lots of, like, fans and... There's a lot of talk about men's mental health in there, which is really, really exciting to watch as a sort of, well, someone who's always wanted to talk about this. It's really rare that a documentary like this, and I think the Class of 92 did it a lot. So I think Welcome to Wrexham has really smashed it there. And hopefully as the season go on, there'll be more conversations. And also about disabled fans, which I'd never seen talked about before in a documentary. So big up to that show. Please watch it. It's on Disney Plus. We're not getting paid by Disney Plus. I think you can probably guess that with our budget. But yeah, hopefully people will watch.
We wish that. We were.
Oh, God, imagine. Well, if we got paid by Disney Plus, okay, let's just say we got a random amount of money. Ridiculous. What is the first football shirt you'd buy?
Oh, that's a good question, you know.
Mm.
I honestly am not too sure. I haven't got Brighton's home this season. Probably get that.
Oh, come on. You've got literally any kit you want on a plane. You're going Brighton this year. Oh.
Yeah, well, I haven't got it. Well, I haven't had a Brighton home kit for a good few years.
Oh, man. I was going to say the Cameroon kit from 1990. That is my favourite kit.
Oh, yeah.
That's a beautiful kit. But speaking of beautiful kits, Mansfield Town, I love their kit this year. I've got off to a solid start. 8th in League 2, beating Man City under-21s. 4-2 in Papa John's Trophy.
Papa John's.
Yeah, that really needs a rebrand, in my opinion. As much as I love that tournament for...
Trophy gets bought out on a scooter with like a pizza box and everything, doesn't it?
I love that tournament because it gives teams like Mansfield a chance at Wembley. And I think when Lincoln City won it and when Portsmouth-Sunderland played, that was an absolute amazing game. I think it had a higher attendance than the FA Cup semi-finals that year, which is just incredible to think of. So I think it has its benefits, but I'm not sure... If under 21 sides are good for the tournament, I'm sure many people were going to who support Mansfield Town. I know my Wickham Wanderers fan in the house completely hates it and they boycott it at Wickham. But it's very interesting, the whole decision. Kieran, do you think it's a good idea for have under 21 teams in this division, in that competition?
It's a tricky one because, I mean, the balance of under 21s teams is so, like, there's a big disparity in there. Like, for example, City's under 21s is going to be a completely different story to like Southampton's under 21, someone like that. If I feel like teams like City, Liverpool, the big kind of teams that can afford to have these packed out squads with under 21s teams almost being as good as like championship teams, I feel like that they kind of ruin it. But then I feel like it's a good it's good to have these kind of under 21s that aren't as good, perhaps not going to go on and win something. It gives them an opportunity to go on and win some silverware as well, which is important for a player's development.
Yeah,
it's a tricky one because there's a lot of positives there, but there's also a lot of negatives. I think going off of fairness, it's probably best to write them off. I think the under 21s probably should just stick to the under 21s bracket, have their own kind of tournaments like this. But it's a tricky one.
Yeah, it is a tricky one. And I think it does have benefits for under 21s facing League Two players and the physicality required. I know Robbie Savage is very open about how youth football and then League Two football is a massive step up in the physicality. And it's about finding that balance. And Forest have got so many loan players in the past who developed in the Championship and then gone on to greater things in the Premier League because they've grown up with a bit more physicality. So I can see both sides, but not to count. Mansfield Town won 3-2, not 4-2. I do apologise. Man City games with 6 goals often confuse me. Mansfield Town have got Doncaster, Bradford City, Carlisle coming up. 3 games. I think they should take 7 points out of, if I'm honest. But best of luck to Mansfield Town, who celebrated Nigel Clough's 100th game in charge. Nigel Clough, obviously, we absolutely love him on this podcast. Kieran, the Bournemouth game coming up, we don't do score predictions, but do you think Forest fans will be happy or a bit meh after the game?
Realistically, if the squad has gelled a little bit more by then, they should be happy. It's one of those games that realistically Forest should be winning, but there's always that chance, especially with a team that's just sat their manager. It's so unpredictable how the squad's going to react and whether the interim manager is actually going to do a good job. So I think it's going to be a tricky one to call, but realistically, it should be a good day.
Now, on our panic-o-meter, from our seats in Q Block to the pint at the end of the bridge, what was the pub? The Waterside. Sorry, that was the word.
The Waterside, yeah.
The Waterside. You said you were just at the start of the bridge in your panic-o-meter of we're going to go down. I was a little bit closer to the Wetherspoons. Where are you after 8 goals shipped to Tottenham and Man City since we last talked?
I am not panicking at the moment. To be honest, it was a good start from the first few games, I think. Picked up points where we should have. But I think I'm probably in a similar area. If not, I might have gone back a little bit, to be honest, towards the stadium, just because got those games over with now. And we know what we've got to deal with. Sitting in 15th at the moment, it's not an awful start to the season. Still got that win and draw, beat West Ham. So I think I've probably gone back a little bit.
Now, Kieran, if Forest get a point or anything from the Bournemouth game, I believe, unless something miraculous happens, your prediction of Forest staying outside the relegation zone in September, even for a week following a game week, as we predicted on our first podcast, I will have to buy you a pint at the Trent Bridge Inn.
Yes, you will. So,
I would love to buy you a pint, shall we say. I think Forest would be in a good position on Saturday. I think the crowd will really be up for this, and the atmosphere has been absolutely sensational. That's pretty much all we have time for this week. Everyone is really gearing up for the SRAs, so lots of work is going on behind the scenes at URN. As you would have heard during the break, plenty of other URN podcasts available. So, Kieran, go well and keep it URN.